Hi, I'm Josh, and I'm telling.
I am Matt, and I will huff and puff and be a big bad wolf, because I'm fucking Stoops Butch. Stoops Butch.
Yep.
And this is Charlie down in Austin, Texas, and I'm a William Castle-inspired buzzer under your seat.
Charlie's an ass man.
Charlie is the Tingler.
Dad. Yes,
there you go.
And this is Horror Show Hot Dog. Why are things happening?
Wow.
So, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Anything cool happened to you this week?
Yeah. Febtoberfest happened.
That was pretty freaking cool. Please explain what this thing is.
For us Minneapolis locals that are fortunate enough to know the people from the Second Best Brewing Club, there is the annual homebrew aficionado party called Febtoberfest that is in St. Paul, which we went to last night, which is generally, I don't know, I think 100 and some odd gallons of various homebrews provided by the various members of the club or people that know people in the club, or at this point even like a legit brewery shows up and brings samples of delicious beers, and it's just like, you know, show up and leave a donation at the door and wander around and just sample bajillions of different kinds of awesome craft beers and eat amazing soft pretzels that this year I believe you and your wife picked up pretzel duty because Greg was in like Ecuador.
He's in Cambodia.
Same thing.
You know, one of them places with them brown people.
Yeah, just somewhere far away and warmer than this.
Warmer than this is not really a qualifier that's useful at this point.
Well, that's true. But, it was just as fun as it was last year.
It is neat. It's handy to be friends with people who just regularly brew way more beer than they can drink.
Yeah.
Because then not only are you not having to brew beer, you're also not having to drink crappy beer.
Preach. I found that if... in lieu of developing skills and talents of my own, I can just surround myself with talented people that are more generous than they have any right to be, and the rest of my world just gets taken care of for me. It's pretty great.
Yeah, in other news, we invited Charlie to be on our show.
Ding, ding. So, yeah, that was probably the most exciting high point of the last... it's not even been a week since we recorded, because we're kind of getting ourselves back into the saddle of the regular schedule. So
yeah.
We've only had 4 or 5 days to...
we're returning you to our regularly scheduled program.
Yeah, we'll be...
Thankfully, two of our movies this week were hella short.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, as long as you're going to be saying things like soups...
And
I'm gonna be, yeah, I'm going to be totes comfortable probs saying hella.
We'll be totes adorbs fresh.
Well, we're all dads now, so we can use the slang to induce cringing in younger people as we should.
Okay. That's good. As long as we're inducing cringing, I'm okay with it.
Like you can avoid it.
She's at 20 centimeters. We have to induce cringing.
Quick, show her Ben Stiller's awkward comedy. Have you got anything exciting going on down Austin way?
I kind of hooked up with these guys that... there's a property in East Austin that's this guy owns these multiple properties, and he basically built a drive-in movie theater in the back there.
Cool.
And they have a 16mm projector, a 35mm projector, and then a digital doobad with the Blu-ray and the whole bit. And this thing is unreal. And so I kind of hooked up with these guys, and we're actually going to do Austin Horror meeting, I think in April. We're going to do like a screening thing where everybody brings food and barbecue stuff and then show up a movie and do all this kind of whatever. And on top of that, a couple of these guys are kind of movie types. One guy does practical effects, the other guy does camera work. And so we're working on maybe getting one of my shorts together to shoot the summer when Conlon's gone.
Oh, very cool.
That's great.
So it was you're talking about like the most productive thing. Like, met new people, like kind of befriended a couple people, and then hooked up with these guys that I could potentially shoot something with. So I was like, that worked out lovely. I was like, I couldn't have possibly gone better than that. It was great. It was really cool.
Nice.
And, man, this facility, this space that this dude has is just badass. I mean, the screen is like, I mean, I want to say it's like, Josh, I mean, like, you remember back, like, you know, like, remember the Canal View 5? You remember, like, that the one big one in Canal View,
like the
bigger theater?
Yeah,
that bigger one. That's about the size of this fucking screen. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It's
huge.
Oh, my God. It's incredible.
Let me
ask you. When I showed up, they were playing video games on the thing.
Yeah.
Let me ask a practical question. You said they have a 16mm projector and a 35mm projector?
Yep.
Does 16 not get super fuzzy, shitty looking when you blow it up that big?
Well, that's kind of the thing, is they, the guy was telling me, the guy who actually runs the scheduling and stuff for this space or whatever, he was telling me that, like, the 16 works okay, where, like, they basically, they kind of monkey with it a little bit and try to get it to behave itself, but
sure.
it's not exactly the best, because it is the booth that they've built, this big-ass tower, is back a ways to where, you know, it's at a proper distance, you know, an actual
right,
convention
yeah.
tower, that, you know, it's back there, and, so yeah, I mean, it's like he says it works okay, and I've not seen anything. When I was there, they did My Bloody Valentine, the original one.
Oh, very cool.
And that was on 35 millimeters. So that was cool. But like, I haven't seen anything on 16. But they said it's you know, quasi okay.
Right. Because I mean, isn't that usually even stuff that was shot on 16? If you actually were going to manage to get distribution, they would then transfer the print to 35.
Oh yeah, of course. No, yeah. I mean any stuff post like mid 80s. I mean, it'd be like, you know, trying to find a 16 millimeter print or something, they'd just be like, we don't know what that is. It's just like, you know, it's like trying to explain to some high schooler now what a CD is. And like,
sure.
What is that? What the hell are you talking about? Oh, yeah, the other thing I want to mention to you guys, and Josh, I kind of have a space cadet, I meant to send this to you. This dude, this guy named Angus Swente, I don't know how to pronounce the last name. Anyway, last year at Texas Frightmare, they did a block of shorts. And one of them was a short called Torturous, and he's got it up on Vimeo, and he sent me posted the link, and we're gonna post it on the site. But it's really funny and excellent, and I totally spaced sending it to you because I wanted to send it to you guys so you could see it before we recorded, but I'm an idiot and forgot. So I want to send it to you because it's real funny and great and excellent and a good example of what you can do comedy horror and actually make it good.
Cool.
And cool dude, I kind of forgotten about it, and then he like. You know, send it over to me. So I promise I will remember to send it to you. It's quite cool.
Yeah, I'll set it up for next week. That's
yeah, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. It's really a hoot. But anyway, that's all the news that's fit to print down here.
All the news that's fit to print to a 16 millimeter print.
Right.
Yes. Or, yes. 16.
You can also watch movies on 8 millimeter where they just load it into a bullet and shoot it into your head.
Or Nicolas Cage just. Twitches and cringes.
Damn you, I was just thinking of something Nicolas Cage related.
I'm sorry, I didn't know. I find low-hanging fruit delicious, so I will usually be the first to grab it.
Induce Nicolas Cage cringing. Dear God. You know who's a fantastic actor, though?
Who?
Vincent fucking Price.
Fuck yeah, he is.
And he was in this
sweet
movie
seg, bro.
That we watched called The House on Haunted Hill, or La Casa en el Monte Atormentado.
I like that one.
Atormentado.
That's got some teeth.
There's no haunted. You get tormented for Spanish.
Fine.
So. That's interesting.
Yeah, this is... I'd seen this one before. But like I said last week, I was just in the mood for some Vincent Price. Because, goddamn, he's like a Tony Todd where I just love hearing him speak.
Like, and there is not...
The voice is just so like... Oh. And he's best when he is just quietly talking.
Yeah.
You know? Like, when he gets a little more animated, it's like, it's fine. But I love it when he's just quietly saying something horrible. Like, it's just, it's so good.
And he has that British thing where, like we noticed in Hammer Horror.
Yep.
Where you wouldn't say, like, you fuck my wife, you fuck my wife. You're like, well, I believe you've engaged in relations with my wife. I may have to kill you now with a chainsaw.
You understand that upsets me.
Yeah.
And when I get upset.
And it's really scary.
And you're just like, fuck, man. Yeah, no, I was thinking that too, watching it again, is that there's a pretty... clear through line in my perception of watching a Vincent Price movie as there would be with watching Christopher Lee or Peter Cushing or that kind of era of horror actor, which there's something stately about all the proceedings that it's just neat, you know, like I don't know what it is.
I think it's all these people with really good manners who are just have hearts of blackest coal though.
Yeah,
and the politeness. It's like the really extreme version of Minnesota Nice. Like, not only am I passive aggressive, I'm also homicidal.
Yeah, it's weird, but I mean, I would not make a movie in this style with characters that behave in this way. But I really enjoy watching people for whom it seems natural behave in that way and be those type of characters. So it's like I was trying to puzzle this out earlier today. But I feel like it's the way that, like, my grandparents, when they would dress up and go out, and my grandpa had an actual fedora, not a hipster fedora.
Right.
And wore it unironically because he'd been doing it for 50 years. And, like, you know, would put on his shirt and tie and whatever, and my grandma would dress up and have the earrings with the matching brooch and whatever. Like, that made sense, and I get it, and it worked. And I appreciated that. I would never in a million years dress like that to go out, because that's just not me, and it would be uncomfortable and awful. But you can kind of respect it. And I feel like Vincent Price is one of those guys where it's like, dude, like, that era is gone, but I can appreciate watching someone else do that. It's just neat.
I actually hadn't seen you think this before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen the remake, so...
Which I liked. I actually liked the remake.
The remake was okay. Isn't that the one that, by the end of it, though, it's a giant, like, CG...
Smoke monster. Yeah, but it's got, like, Famke Janssen and Chris Kattan.
Right.
So
I was kind of surprised at the, like, the elements of the supernatural are not really that important in this, and it's more of a, like, almost a film noir with the way that it twists back and forth, kind of a thriller.
It's much more of a character study.
Kept me guessing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's interesting, too, when you watch it, it's funny when you're talking about Vincent Price and that kind of stateliness. It's like you think about movies like, Night of the Hunter or Shadow of a Doubt, where like they're like these supremely sinister or bad meaning type people, but they do it in kind of a polite kind of a way. And it's very disarming, you know. It's like it's very like, especially in Night of the Hunter, you know he's bad. You know he's bad news, but it's one of those things where sort of like he's kind of like, well, you know, maybe he's okay potentially. It's like, no, we know he's not okay. We know he's intent on killing these children, but he does it in such a way that's kind of disarming. And with Vincent Price, like, even the very beginning of this movie, when he's got that scene with his wife in the bedroom, you know, when he's talking about, like, this whole of this little banter about, you know, having him killed, or he's going to kill her, or she's going to kill him, or he's going to point whatever. The thing about the poison, and I mean, it's just like, you get this, like, This pleasant sort of, like, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, they could be talking about, like, window treatments.
Yeah, no, the exactly, very
yeah, exactly.
That's
the perfect way to say it.
That first little bit of bantering, I kind of caught a flirtation vibe off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this is, you know, like the Gomez and Morticia kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or, like, I would make a joke to Jess, like,
yep.
You know, my life insurance is paid up, just make it look like an accident.
Right.
But then later you find out that, no, they really hate the shit out of each other. They just have this, like, really macabre sense of humor.
I think that's the thing, is I think it's gone on long enough for them that they're sort of resigned to it.
Yeah.
Where the potentially years of white-hot boiling-over anger where you'd be yelling, they're past that. There's such a well-worn groove in their hatred that it's a familiar thing that it's just... Well, you know, you're the worst. My mother told me never to marry you. And you're just kind of going through it. You don't have to even expend the energy. Yeah, exactly. And so,
well, you know, early on, she's got that, you know, that early on, pretty early in the movie where she's got that scene, that one scene where she's got that whole, like, you know, it's not as it seems kind of thing and talking about his previous wives or whatever else.
Yeah.
Like, you listen to her tone of voice, you're like, okay, she just kind of sounds like this kind of disgruntled sort of, you know, she seems kind of, you know, snooty and unpleasant a little bit, but just sort of kind of flat, you know? But if you listen to what she's actually saying, the actual words that she's using, it's this super manipulative thing, and it really kind of, at least for me anyway, like, it really sets you on edge for her character pretty early on, not because she sounds like a bad guy, like a, you know, kind of like an old, who's afraid of, whatever happened to Baby Jane kind of character, where you're like, oh, she's fucking crazy. But it's like, you it's not how she sounds, it's what she says, and you're like, damn, man. Like, they just throw it in there really early. It's just sort of like, oh, we know she's up to no good. And she sounds like she's up to no good. And it's just like, it's just really kind of neat to, like, to see this kind of nuanced thing where usually female characters are kind of useless in these kind of movies, you know?
Like, yeah, especially for the era, you know, yeah.
But yeah,
in,
yeah. I mean,
like, in a modern-day movie,
no purpose.
She would be like the mom in Excision. Like, in a modern movie, she would be... so unpleasant, so that there was a big blinking neon sign on her, this lady's no good.
Yeah.
And
so you wouldn't be at all surprised when it turns out that she's...
Yeah, like, at best she'd be Juliette Lewis in the Carrie remake.
Yeah.
You know, on the high end in a modern movie. But yeah, she's...
Julianne Moore,
I'm sorry.
Subtle,
Juliette Lewis would be great.
Yeah.
As the mom in the Carrie remake. Shit.
Juliette Lewis as her character in The Other Sister.
Oh, God, that'd be awesome. Or better yet, as her character from Dusk Till Dawn. I just made a way
Shut
better
the fucking
movie
door,
in my head.
Please.
And Vincent Price plays three characters.
I really love Vincent Price's reaction when they're, like, suspecting him for the murder of his wife, like, oh, what husband hasn't wanted to kill his wife?
Yeah, it's just... Like,
which is...
What?
It's clear that he's not too worried that he's gonna get blamed for this crime, you know? Mm-hmm. He's like, fuck it, man. If I had wanted to kill her, I've had way more opportunities than this that I've totally passed on in favor of this, which is pretty fucking inconvenient for me, guys.
Right. Which is...
It's lovely.
Laid out quite logically.
It also... But the thing is what we know from the end of the movie, when we find out that his wife, you know, fakes her death with her boyfriend, Trent, to try to... For some reason, they assume that if she shows up dead, that'll make Marianne want to shoot...
Yeah, they're trying Vincent to scare Price. Marianne into shooting him.
Yeah, and I don't remember what her real name was, but she just reminds me of the kind of naive Marianne character.
Yeah.
But, so they're like, okay, if I pretend to have been hung by someone, Marianne will shoot my husband, which is a weird plot and makes a lot of assumptions if you're trying to kill your husband.
Yeah.
But, meanwhile, we know Vincent Price is hoping to bump off his wife at some point.
Hmm.
So, if he was planning on killing her during the night, and then sees her hung... And hanged. And
hung well, I mean.
Right. But then sees her hanged and is like, oh, okay. I mean, at that point, shouldn't he be like, well, shit. Someone else here is a murderer, too.
I kind of figure that he already knew. Like, he's playing the really long game. He knew that his wife was seeing this dude. He knew that she was going to try to kill him eventually. He sets it up, sets up this party so that she can make her move.
So she has the opportunity.
And somehow he's confident that he's going to escape it. You know, like, he gives all the guns.
That's the thing with the guns.
But loads of
the blanks. Yeah, with the blanks. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's okay.
In and of itself, I mean, you know, just to touch on that part for a second, you know, sort of like, I mean, he's supposed to be this rich millionaire, kind of eccentric sort of a guy. If I'm the doctor that's stripping the wife on the side, even he must be the world's biggest idiot. Or when you see a table with a bunch of custom made little itty bitty coffins. Yeah. There's guns in them. I just kind of, at that point, I would think, you know, maybe leaving would be better. I think, you know, like this at this stage of the game, like, this is probably not worth it.
The stakes like, seem
this dude
very
has custom
high.
Made. This is like, I don't know if this. I think I need to walk at this point. You know, he made custom coffins with guns in them. I think this is. there's no screwing around at this point.
Remind me as well, because I feel like I don't know if I nodded off or something, but when Marianne does. As predicted, flip out and shoot Vincent Price. She runs out of the basement, and Trent, right, comes out of a secret passage and retrieves Price's body.
Does he?
And does it, because I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. I feel like I was kind of watching it, but I got distracted by a phone call or something. But I thought the progression there was something like she shoots him and runs away, and then I thought, like, someone pops out from, like, a wall... And, like, dragged... I swear I'd seen him get dragged into, like, the pool of acid, and then when he pops out later, I'm like, I thought they got rid of the body. Weird.
No, Trent ends up in the pool of acid.
Right. But before that...
Yeah, but they... I think it was one of those things where, like, when it's, like, they... He slips or something, or, like, there's, like the...
Oh, yeah, okay, so...
She runs back upstairs or something.
Yeah, Wikipedia...
Remember, something like that.
Yeah, Wikipedia says she flees the room, Dr. Trent slips in and tries to get rid of his body by pushing into the vat of acid, but the lights go out and the sounds of a struggle and splash are heard. So that's what it was, is I must have just not realized that was the switch where he gets dumped instead of Vincent Price.
Yeah, you know, that pool of acid is the only thing that really doesn't hang... For me in this?
It's a little...
It's kind of ridiculous. Like, I can buy that there's this house with this horrible history, and there are ropes and knives and guns, but, it, like, and they have a pool of acid in the basement. They killed a bunch of people, and they...
Well, they have a cistern full of acid.
And it's now... It's still full of acid. Like, when they pulled the bodies out and shit, they're like, what should we do with the pool of acid? It got fucking...
Put a lid on it.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah, also...
They just put some peanut butter around it so the mice will fall in.
Are we meant to understand, when Marianne is stuck in that little side room off the basement where the pool of acid is, and she sees a creepy old lady ghost, who then, like, glides out of the room, and that happens, she appears,
that's,
like...
I love that, the little gurney pull, I love
that. Oh, it's great, yeah, absolutely.
Her makeup is amazing, though.
But, like, so that happens once or twice, and then we're introduced to that woman as one of the caretakers?
Yeah, yeah.
So is she in the employ of Vincent Price being used to freak people out? Is she in the employ of the wife being used to freak people out? Is she just a creepy old lady that likes freaking people out?
I think she's been being employed by the screenwriter to freak the audience
out. Right, because it's like, she's in the room, like, frozen face and claw, like, handling, nah! And then glides out of the room while some woman screams, and it's like, why are you doing that?
She mastered that walk that, what is it, Lisa Marie does in Mars Attacks?
Yeah.
Where you look like you're on wheels.
You look like you're being pulled along on a dolly, yeah. So I was trying to figure out, like, this is the first time it occurred to me. He's like, wait, what was that all about?
Yeah, inside the movie, I think it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I don't think it
sense.
Hangs on anything, which is a little weird.
She's neat, man. That scared the crap out of me.
No, it's a great bit. It's just, it doesn't
scene,
tie together
that scene
later.
Soon after that, too. Well, that scene a little bit, like, I don't think it's like right after it, but it's but when one of the many moments that Conlon, my son, watched this with me, and he pointed out that, like, he's like, he pointed out that this was, you know, made a long time ago, and so these guys do every dumb thing that you can think of, in terms of, like, where they're putting themselves in the house, and where they're going, what they're not noticing, or whatever. But when the one woman goes through the curtain, and then goes down the hallway, or whatever else, and then the guy, like, tries to stop her, and says, you know, like, come with me, they're trying to kill her, but it's bad news, and then she goes, ah! Takes off. You're thinking, like, he's like, yeah, he kind of startled her, and put his hand over her mouth, or whatever, but it's like, but he also said something that would be kind of valuable to you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like he sounds like he may not be looking to do you harm. You know?
Yeah.
He didn't say, come with me if you want to die.
He was 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like, it was one of those situations where it's just like, as Conlon pointed out, he's like, yeah, why didn't she listen to him?
Yeah, that's a good,
like,
point.
Yeah.
Well, because, like, she was a woman, son, and this is
the
1940s.
Yeah, they don't have a brain, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing, too, to kind of cut to the chase at the end of this movie, then. We have Vincent Price's wife, all smug and shit, but then the skeleton emerges from the vat of acid and kind of creeps around the room, freaking her out. And it is... That's a marionette.
Yeah.
And it's a real obvious marionette. And you go, oh, God, the years have not been kind on this movie. And the marionette freaks her out until she falls into the vat of acid. And then you see Vincent Price holding all the strings to the skeleton marionette step out, and you go, that is the smartest way to deal with an effect you couldn't pull off, mm-hmm. is to make it a cheesy effect within the actual movie. I was like, oh my God, this just, you can tell, it's not even like, it's kind of doing that little wobbly marionette walk where it's sort of trying to look
like
it's moving
like
its feet,
Roundup. Yeah.
But it's gliding, yeah, and then it's like, oh shit. That is exactly what it's doing. That is what she saw, too, in that scene. Like, that's really smart. Now, did they think that through? Or is that just an artifact of that's the way the plot went and blah, blah, blah?
I don't know, but I would prefer to think that the original version of that script was, and then the vengeful skeleton rises from the acid, like, we cannot pull that shit off. But Vincent Price can pull that off.
Right. You know, and that's kind of the thing, is it's like, that makes so much sense, and I love it on the level of where it stands to the era and the technology available. And, like, yep, we've just strapped all of the weaknesses of what we can do into this movie and made them positive methods to, like, when you think you've outsmarted the movie, it's actually the movie proving it outsmarted you by showing that it's an effect. That's crazy smart. I don't know if I want to give him credit for that.
Yeah.
But I love the way that plays out on film.
And also, like,
well,
the...
Also,
go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, I was going to say, it also kind of goes to the thing of, like, his little speech at the beginning of the movie about, like, you know, the whole surviving the night thing and all the ghosts and the stories of the ghosts and blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of whole little lovely little narrative at the beginning. It's kind of one of those things, and Matt, I think what you pointed out is very smart in the, you know, the kind of fade out to the marionette part of it, is that, like, is this actually haunted? Are there actually ghosts going on here? Or is it just this sort of eccentric, goofy, weird, slightly creepy sort of fellow kind of pulling the strings from point one, and then never really goes to begin with. And it sort of was like, it kind of, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, well, it's kind of interesting. But on the other side of the coin, you know, William Castle was a showman and a shyster, and, you know, he kind of worked every trick he could possibly pull off in order to get things done, you know, so...
He was entertaining enough they made the movie Matinee based on him, you know?
Yeah, that's it. I love that.
It was a great movie. I love that one too.
I love that movie. It's kind of one of those things where, like, it's kind of interesting to think: is it like, do they just sort of go, wait, we can't do this right, so we have to make a reason for inserting a line of dialogue or whatever, or is it on the other side of the coin, like, but they're just kind of playing with this idea that there's, yeah, there aren't any some such ghosts. Just
yeah, I don't think...
Don't screw with the wrong guy the wrong day.
There's nothing in the movie that is ever left up to our imagination is that could be an actual supernatural event, I don't think.
Yeah.
No, no.
The only thing that would be difficult to explain, although they do try to explain it, is being, like, when they have the... his dead wife appear out the window and the rope comes in and does the vine move from Evil Dead.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, ropes don't behave like that. So technically that's impossible without some supernatural help, except you guys claim credit for it later. So obviously in the reality of the movie, they were able to do that somehow.
Well, that's kind of Scooby. That's kind of like a Scooby-Doo aspect to it, kinda, too. Where, yeah. Like, yeah, if you go back and watch, and I've done this recently with Connor and I've watched old Scooby-Doo episodes. And it's funny when you go back and, like, you do the big reveal. Oh, it was you know, Mr. Johnson,
old man, whatever. Yeah.
If you go back from that point and then rewind back to the beginning of the Scooby-Doo episode, there are things that Mr. Johnson does with the weird rubber monster mask.
Yeah.
And that are not possible for a human being wearing a monster mask. But it just, once you get to the reveal, you've forgotten all the supernatural shit that this guy pulled off earlier on the thing. So it's kind of one of those things where you're like maybe they won't remember.
Yeah. And that's probably true.
That the lady floating outside the window, I thought was a really cool looking scene, though. Just all the lighting and everything's really theatrical in this, more than movie.
Yeah,
because you know, like we don't see very often nowadays something that was filmed on a soundstage. Right. So when you have like outside with the wind blowing and the lightning, it's that light strobing on and off, and somebody shaking tin and. You know, they had, like, a fan blowing her hair around. And
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it, for some reason, they, like, the way that that looks is just really interesting and cool.
Apparently, you can also get this, there's a colorized version of this movie as well, which I would not want to see.
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea.
So I feel like that, you have to light so specifically for black and white that would just ruin it. So, I don't know, anything else we want to cover on this one before we move on?
Well, and I think, you know, the only thing to keep in mind with Vincent Price movies, and especially these type of ones, is that it's what's fun to do with these, and this is what we ended up doing, was we watch this one, and then we also watch a couple other ones. Yeah, you just kind of grab a few other ones that are, you know, whatever ones that occur to you.
Sure.
I think we did House of Dracula, and then we did, Damnation, I can't, that one just fell out of my head, but it's fun to just to watch them, because, I mean, Vincent Price, I mean, he's been in 9,000 movies, so it's
kinda, yeah,
yeah. It's just sort of fun to watch them in slugs, because they're short, and they're charming, and they're just, you know, it makes a lot of fun.
Totally.
I was going to say
a little something.
Well, never mind. I was like, it should be right here in my notes.
Quality.
It was not in my notes. Yeah, it was really interesting. The ending to this is really abrupt.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's another thing that's just kind of divorced from modern sensibility. Like, you have all your credits at the beginning.
Yeah, like, to the point of even, like, the little copyright notice and all that shit, yeah.
And then in the end, there's, like, there's no falling action, really. There's not the scene afterward that you'd have now, and there's not the stinger that you'd have now. They're like, just kidding, there were totally really ghosts.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, yes, I murdered her, and now I'm prepared to face justice. Like,
walk upstairs, disappear, disembodied head of scared guy going, now there's two more ghosts, and they're coming for you, the audience.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that is, yeah. That just is like, the whoa. Best.
Like, that's it, you know? And I think that's the point where, like, the skeleton comes out in the theater if you're at the right theater for the original thing, yeah. But
and apparently all the little, like, Dennis the Menace kids sitting in the theater would shoot at it with slingshots.
Sure.
Yeah. So the skeleton didn't come out for long.
Yeah.
It stayed in the closet
for
too long.
With R. Kelly, of course.
I love this movie. Watching it again, I actually liked it even more than the first time I watched it. So for me, this is like an 8 out of 10 coffin revolvers.
Whoa. I like the... I liked watching this fresh and not knowing anything about it and actually getting caught up in the twists and turns of the plot and, like, explaining it to myself on paper, like, oh, wait. So I think at this point the husband has definitely staged this whole thing to kill the wife. Like, oh, no, wait. Oh. So I felt like the audience might have felt watching it back in the day, except I wasn't wearing a fedora or overalls and a slingshot. Well, I was wearing a fedora, but it wasn't for this. So, pacing-wise and effects-wise and even, like, style of acting-wise, it's light years removed from any sensibility that I'm, like, comfortable in.
Okay.
But I still really enjoyed it, and Vincent Price is the fucking truth. So, yeah, I get like a 7.5 out of 10. Every man has wanted to kill his wife at one time or another.
Yeah, it's just, you know, these are so much fun to watch. You know, they're just, they're charming, and they've got that wonderful, like, that wonderful kind of, like, you know, late night public access kind of thing about them where they just, yeah, at some point or other, this scared the pants off of people. When it came out in the late 50s or whatever. And then there's a lot of these ones of his, you know, like that, like, you know, House of Usher and, you know, Last Man on Earth and, I don't know, just a bunch of other ones that are just, you know, kind of this weird stuff that Vincent Price is in. And it makes a lot of fun. And so I love watching this again. I have to say, the other thing I loved about this was I love watching it with Conlon. It was a hoot. He had so much fun with it. He was having such a ball. So that made it even better. So I'd probably be right in there with Josh about, you know, right on the, right around the 7.5 range. Also, the other thing too, and I think they've got it on the Wikipedia page, but that original poster for that movie is just like, there are not many posters in modern times that do as much as this poster does for this movie. Like,
true.
Just look at that original print. Goddamn, that is so great.
Yeah, you know, that's a great
like,
poster.
It's so charming in that like goofy macabre kind of cutesy macabre kind of way, and it's just I love it. So yeah, I mean, I'd be right in there with. I'd say 7.5 acid clean rat skeleton.
You know, Cutesy Macabre was my least favorite Bond girl. It's like, goddamn, it's creepy that you have those pigtails with the skull barrettes.
I was going to say Cutesy Macabre was Squeaky Fromm's niece, but.
That is the hardest part about understanding history is like, well, there was a person named Squeaky and nobody thought that was a strange thing. Okay, never mind. Jumping directly from that into something I feel of equal quality, right? The Telling.
No, El no, Contando. Not at all. House on Haunted Hill is good.
I know, I'm kidding.
I know, I just want to make sure, because some people are...
stupid?
You know how some people are born with, like, the genetic flaw where they have, like, red hair? Some people are also born with the genetic flaw where they don't get sarcasm. I want to make sure they know. This is not a good movie, and that last movie was. I'm just kidding, gingers.
So this is a movie with starring Bridget Marquardt and... Holly Madison? No.
Yep.
Yes. Is it?
Yep. I'm looking at the Wikipedia as you say.
It's actually Holly Madison?
Yeah.
Oh, because Dolly... never mind. Oh. And so, two Playboy Playmates and their Playboy Playmate friends and filmed at the Playmate
But they're, like, Mansion. Specifically like Hugh Hefner's harem.
Yeah, back in the day, before they got too old for him.
So, like, 5 years ago when they were in, like, their early 20s.
Exactly. So... there's this weird setup involving the, like... So Holly casts herself as the mega bitch sorority queen.
Yep.
Which is kind of an interesting thing because that would be the type that she would play to. And you would think that if it's her movie, she's going to cast herself as a sympathetic character.
She is also inhuman looking.
Yeah.
She freaks me the fuck out. Like, that's just... She looks like when people... did you see, like, Reddit recently had that thing where someone recreated what the actual face would look like if you used the skull from the Crystal Skull Vodka? She looks like the halfway point to me.
She has too
much
cheekbone.
Yes, there's too much cheekbone, too much brow. It just, none of it looks, it looks like someone who has only ever heard of a human described.
Yeah, well, the aliens are like, what does human male find attractive? Wide set eyes,
yeah.
Big, firm, round breasts.
Yeah, just bolted on tits and like creepy plastic surgery done. Every time she came on screen, I kind of squirmed.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
you're not meant to be the horror in this.
I feel bad.
Well, you know,
I feel slightly
guilty.
She looks
like, too, she looks like, oh, sorry, Josh, go ahead.
I feel slightly guilty for having watched A Bunch of Girls Next Door because I want to say, like, she's actually, like, seems pretty smart, pretty nice, and pretty well-grounded.
No, and she may very well be a great person.
It's weird that she's the most plastic-looking.
Yeah.
Bridget is the nice one. Holly is the smart one. Kendra, who's not on in this movie, was the dumb one.
Hmm.
And boy, was she the dumb one. You'd think that wouldn't be... that they would all be the dumb one, but oh, dear
God. Actually, no, I have a bigger problem with the idea that they wouldn't all be the nice one. I feel like if you're going to surround yourself with women, then you go, well, you'll be the nice one. Well, you've already set yourself up for failure with the other two.
Well, they're all nice to him. Wouldn't you want them all to
be the nice one? Okay, fair enough.
I mean, you know, like, caring
about
dogs
and animals. It's just weird to me that, like, you know, you wouldn't, oh, you're the nice one, you're the whatever one. I'm like, well, okay, well, yeah, let's have some more nice ones. I don't get it.
So we open with a shot of the fucking Playboy Mansion, and then...
Almost the whole thing is shot
there, right? One of the most masterful transitions in cinema history, where you get the, like, the faceted dissolve into the interior where a bunch of 30-year-olds are having a pool party.
Yeah.
And then it's, we get the line, next time join a horrority, not a sorority, and we take it from there.
Which, again, every part of this is like, you seem to be making fun of your own. That's a really weird line, and they'll get even worse in the second story.
Yeah.
But, the one dude, I swear to God, in that pool party scene looks like he's pissed himself. There's a dude in the background that...
You have an eye for detail.
His khakis are just like a big dark round spark around the crotch. And I was like, that guy looks like he pissed himself. That's fucking weird. And then they popped up again. I was like, I think he did.
What was the lady's mom... What was the suicide girl's mom doing there in the first place?
That's also weird.
That's another weird thing. She comes with like a plate of cookies, doesn't she, or something.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, and so it's like... Your daughter is rushing a sorority, and you're there? I guess we know why you didn't get in.
Yes. Yeah, it was so bizarre. They don't explain it. She just kind of, like, comes running in there, sees the girl has committed suicide, and then freaks out or whatever it was. It was like, nobody stops her, like, wait, how did you get here?
Yeah, I think that is, like, that serves the plot, but no logic.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, any purpose whatsoever.
Yeah. We're setting the bar pretty low.
The other thing I want to just throw out right at the beginning of this thing, too, and Josh, you and I were both in the same boat. We actually saw a decent amount of that show when it was on.
Yeah.
Is that Bridget, of the three of them, Bridget is the one that actually knows horror movies. It's like she's seen like thousands of them. And it's like, goes to horror conventions and does all this kind of stuff. And like, really
so she should know better.
And she should fucking know better. This movie.
She should have better fucking known better.
God, Jesus, H. Christ. It was like, it's like... Yeah, you know, there's bad kind of movies, and then there's ones that are like bad on purpose, then there's ones that are just like the Ed Wood level of beyond bad, but it's just ridiculous and you go with it. And there's something like this, where if there's something like this woman Bridget is in this movie, like, she should have looked around and been like, wait a minute.
I've seen movies like this.
Uno momento, por favor.
No, I'm in one.
Well, the problem is you have porn-grade dialogue.
Yeah.
Porn-grade acting.
That's complimentary. I think you're giving it a lot.
I know, like, and a porn grade script starring like softcore porn stars, and yet there is nothing sexy or like even silly sexy or
there's no fun.
Fun.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. No, it's just flat. The whole thing is very flat.
I'll tell you one thing that they did that I thought was kind of brilliant and was the only thing that I liked about this movie. So the sisters are all, they have to tell scary stories so that they can get into the sorority, because that's how sororities work. And the girl starts off, she was a beautiful brunette, and the camera fades to, like, this beautiful brunette lying on a bed. And the girls go, beautiful brunette? She's like, oh, sorry. She was a beautiful blonde, cut to same shot, same girl, now with blonde hair.
Yep.
Like, that is a neat little thing to do. I wonder if they'll keep doing that.
Nope. No, that was the smartest moment in the entire movie.
So the first one is kind of Chucky light.
The Deuter comes home with a doll he got out of a dumpster. The doll falls in love with him while his girlfriend and ex-girlfriend are...
Yeah, ex-girlfriend isn't necessarily there to...
It has nothing to do with anything. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, eventually...
That was a total missed opportunity, because it was like, right before the ex-girlfriend, the British girl, was living with, who is... By far the most beautiful girl in the whole damn movie.
Truly, and also her accent was, wow, that was all over the place.
Yeah, that's a different yeah, it's just like, which part of England are you from? The Australian part, or which part are you from? But it was like,
her and Dick Van Dyke.
Like, she was the most like normal everyday. Yeah, the Dick Van Dyke sort of section of the chimney sweep league, but yeah, she's the most normal looking. She's the most pretty, but it's like she's the least plasticine of all of them. But they totally miss an opportunity in that one, because like he brings his doll home, right, this whole thing. And up until the point where British girl looks under the sink with her head, Nobody knows how to open a cabinet and just look from where you're standing. I gotta stick my fucking head in there.
Which was her British accent, by the way.
Which just turns into foghorn. Like, I say, I'm gonna stand that. But it's like, you know, she sticks her head in there, and then the doll, you know, goes to work on her, and
does something to her head that involves only the first, like, top third of her head.
And also, but still results in her laying face down on the floor in the kitchen, covered in blood, but with no discernible wounds.
Yeah.
So, it was a bloodless movie.
Like, once that happened, I was like, I pounded the table, because I was just like, they missed an opportunity to make the British woman like some kind of, you know, she was the one that was, you know, making them both go nutty or whatever.
Or at least a red herring.
Like, you know, it's just something. Yeah, something. It was like, just
having
making
her serve
right
any
up until
purpose
the last moment, you think that she's up to something.
Yeah.
It seems like that was so cool. Yeah, that was way above this movie's pay grade. Was, But then why have the girl in there in the first place? It's just to add like 10 more minutes to that segment, which I kept pausing and checking the time. Just like, this, there's three stories in this, right? In a wraparound.
Mm-hmm.
And that one takes up a good 25 minutes of it.
Yeah.
So then Bridget's thing is short and kind of artsy in the, like, ABCs of Death way.
Yeah. And again, that's the second segment where she is the washed-up actress that's no longer beautiful. This is the current playmate and harem member for Hugh Hefner. She's playing the washed-up, no longer beautiful actress. And it's like, that's a weird, biting commentary that she'll be living in 5 years.
If this movie came out last year...
This movie came out in 2009.
Oh, 2009?
5 years ago.
So that was right before he dumped them.
Okay, so she was...
Sure. That may have been her parting gift.
Maybe, you know.
Yeah, but there's like so the vampires with the undead making horror movies and...
Well, making snuff films.
And then there's some absinthe involved and...
Yeah, I like the weird... I like the homage to Schindler's List where certain things get colorized but the other things don't. I'm sure that's exactly what they're thinking of when they put it together. I want to do that red dress thing. Yeah, let's do that. Cool. All right, cool. Does that make any sense? None whatsoever. All right, cool. We'll stick with that.
Sorry, there are weird things going on here.
Wait. Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Proceed.
So yeah, that second segment is kind of the weird... Oh, we've seen it before. It's a version of the... former film star shut up in her mansion watching her own films, except she's dead and
doesn't
is going to be watching people
say,
be beautiful forever.
Doesn't she even say, like, I'm ready for my close-up?
She does, yeah.
So they're pulling in the Sunset Boulevard thing, like...
Well, and again, then, this is another one where they had an opportunity to make it cooler when, like, what they could have been, you could have been like, here's the big reveal, we do this crazy fucking shit and we do all this stuff where we do all this reanimation and all this kind of stuff and zombies and the whole bit and be like, hey, what do you think? And then have her, like, him and haw about it, and then, like, call her agent all freaked out, and then be like, oh, well, we've got you a commercial ad doing a place for used couches in Costa Mesa or whatever else, and that's the only thing I can get you. And then she turns around and, be like, makes a decision to become this, like, you know, eternal, you know, undead sort of, you know, never lose her looks thing or whatever else, and make her make that choice. And I think that would have been so much cooler, but it's just like, and then it's just sort of like, she's sitting there, like, all Stepford wifey, and it's like, ugh.
I did think while watching this movie, in each segment, this doesn't have to be bad.
Yeah.
I did think that. I literally had that thought each time. I was like, I see what they're doing here, and I see that this could have been done well. And all of it, like, these are all things where you could just take a different writer, and you could take the same premise and just tweak enough of the details that it would actually be compelling.
Yeah.
Maybe not terrifying, maybe not the best thing ever, but it could be compelling. And
I was sad about that.
Just every segment was a missed opportunity.
Bridget is... Like, having watched the show, she was my favorite, like, character on the show.
Yeah.
She, you know, like, she's kind of sweet and nice, and she, and it seemed kind of like she had her shit together and was very clear-eyed about the whole Playboy thing. But then she just gets nothing to do here, and it's kind of bogus.
Yeah, she is one of the most wasted... wasted cameos in this whole thing. I guess not a cameo, she's in too much of it to be that. But yeah, like, for being the person that is clearly one of the two reasons this thing was made at all.
Yeah.
She just has nothing to do. And although, I will also point out, she is by far the worst actress in the film.
Yeah.
She is awful.
She doesn't get anything to do,
you don't think
though.
So?
No.
Who do you think is worse?
The blonde girl in the first segment was just...
Oh, God. I thought her... Wait, the main, like, the freaky chick that doesn't look human?
She put that doll in the bed on purpose!
Oh, no, that chick's bad, too, I guess.
Yeah, she's... We're arguing...
That's true. We're arguing
smells of farts here.
Yeah, we're arguing over the tallest jockey.
He said Shades of Grey, I said Smells of Farts. Now I'm thinking of a book called 50 Smells of Farts.
We'd sell that shit at fucking Hot Topic and make a bundle.
Oh, Matt's friend is intrigued.
So then our final segment...
Slumber Party Massacre?
Basically, yeah.
And
it's a home invasion thing with no real tension.
Doesn't it turn out that
purpose?
One of the girls is the one doing it? I barely was paying attention to that point. So I think it is like they think it's the skeezy cable guy,
but it's not. And then they think the cop is actually the killer.
But then
their logic there is brilliant. Well, he was by himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Don't you guys always come in pairs? And I was like, who thinks cops only work in teams?
Yeah.
That's insane.
He's like, when we're hard up enough, we'll come in anything, lady. But I think by the end of it, though, one of the girls is walking down the hallway wearing the dude's clothes.
And I honestly cannot remember the end of this now. And Wikipedia just says where the real killer is. She is promptly killed. It doesn't actually say.
No, I think the real killer, because remember it cuts back, I can't believe I'm remembering this in such detail, but when they go, it cuts back to the house of whomever's being killed or whoever they called or whatever the hell, it's like you have this sort of juxtaposition between somebody who looks like a normal kind of a person, then you have this like person that's being covered over by a sheet and looks like kind of this sort of older sort of guy, and then when on the hallway, the person that's standing there where you see him is wearing the same older person guy clothing that was being covered over.
Yeah.
And so it's like, but then that, but again, the logic test is like, wait a minute. So he covered him over the sheet for no goddamn reason, and then he's sort of like, well, I'm going to go kill these broads who were messing with me before, but first, I got to make sure to scalp the guy to get his hair, get his clothing, make sure we get that all squared up, and then figure out via map quest how to get to these people's house.
Yeah,
and
that's
like,
what it was.
It becomes like, when like she looks down the hallway, and you think like it's got the drill and the whole bit, and you're like, that should be a really kind of a freaky moment or whatever else. And I'm just looking the whole time like, man, this guy had a lot of, like, he was really organized. Because there's not a lot of time to
daily planner
take
looks
his clothing
weird.
And figure out where the fuck he's going. You know?
Yeah, he was ready to go when he woke up that morning.
You know,
he had a
Slumber Party Massacre actually managed a couple of jolts, right?
Sure, yeah. Not a great movie, but it made sense in its way.
I kind of enjoyed the entirely expected, like, there's poison in the cookies thing at the end.
Yeah, I mean, you saw that coming, but it dragged the death forever.
But then I'm gonna haunt you fucking bitch was kind of funny. We may be dead, but you'll still be a loser. It was like, where the fuck were you the rest of the movie?
Yep.
That is funny shit for, you know, Holly Madison to be saying.
Yeah. But, it went way too long.
If they had cut about half of that in there, and they just did a bing, bang, boom, bang, and then just ended it, then it would have been beautiful, because they have all of this dumb... Like, why do you have exposition with 30 seconds left to go in the movie? Like, she walks out and sees her mom, and then they have this whole conversation. And it's sort of this whole thing, like, oh, well, now we're going to walk around this way. Oh, yes, now it's finished. Oh, yes, I agree with you. Yes, we should go get some
Shall
coffee.
We go to IHOP? Yes.
Yeah, it's just like, fuck.
Time for some moon over my hammy for a murder well done.
It was just like, just stop the thing already. And the thing that was that, like, you can do that kind of vicious reveal, kind of hidden intent thing, or quasi-hidden intent, and you just don't have to explain. We're not that stupid.
Kaiser Soze, you know, is a change in a walk and then hopping into a car and driving away.
Yeah.
And that told you everything you needed to know about someone having a plot running through an entire movie. Then you're like, oh shit, that was a plan all along. You could have done where they all start choking, she has a quip, blah 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 for my sister, walks out, high fives mom, they walk away. That's all you need. You can
don't
do that.
Don't you forget about me.
Although, even in crappy movies, you get the vengeful reveal thing, or you get the kind of unexpected reveal at the end, like with the mom. I mean, I didn't expect the mom to climb out of the bushes, to be honest, but it was like, I thought that was kind of cool, except for again, it ruined some of his exposition. But it reminds me of, like, in the did you guys see Among Friends, Danielle Harris's directorial debut?
No, but I love Danielle Harris.
I don't think so.
It was filmed a couple years ago. It just came out this last little bit of time. Anyway, it's got some good people in it, and it's kind of a fun party breakdown, one person's a crazy person kind of a thing. But it's got one of those lovely little stingers at the end, like at the end of Urban Legend. with Rebecca Gayhart. You know, it's kind of got that little zing. And they could have done that here and had that fun little zing, and that would have made it more enjoyable. And on top of the fact that these girls, while they hit the lottery in the genetic gene pool, in the genetic lottery, but like the whole death sequence, it was just sort of was like what I wanted to have happen is I wanted the girl who had poisoned them to pull out a gun and go out and shoot each one of them.
Yeah,
they're dying. Double tap. It was about the most, about the worst on screen dying I have seen.
It was bad. Yeah,
and he was just like ah ooh ee, ee, ah, ee, ah ooh.
You know, they just, took a lessons was, from Paul Rubens.
I was just going to say, exactly. It's Paul Rubens exactly. And Buffy. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right, so, like, wrapping it up on this, like, the reason that I wanted to watch this is, like, one, I'm kind of a perv. Two, I liked the show, and I kind of liked those women as people. But I also kind of expected it to be either super charged, sexy, and kind of dumb, or silly and gonzo and over the top, or like Fountains of Gore, or like crazy B movie, and it was just so tame.
Considering one of the two women that it was clearly created for is supposed to be a big horror hound,
yeah, she
and
is, yeah,
they are cool. Known for getting naked. This movie should have been Piranha 3D or My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Yeah,
that would have made sense with these two actresses. Clearly, no problem getting naked when getting paid. Love the genre. You could have done something like that that's an homage to a style of movie but updated for modern sensibilities. People would have gone apeshit and cheered in theaters like they did for those two movies.
Yep.
Makes perfect sense. They should have been all about that kind of movie, and what you got is a bloodless direct-to-DVD pile of shit with just no pulse whatsoever. You know? Yeah, it's... So I can't imagine... Maybe Chicky, that's the horror fan, is fucking pissed and hates this movie. I gotta imagine, right?
Because it seems like it was shot as like a PG-13 movie,
yep.
But then the dialogue is all fuck every 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So the like your R is coming out of the dialogue, well, and the only boobs are in the weird girl. Fairy sequence.
Yeah.
Well, the only actual heavy cursing is Bimbette number 7 in the third one, the blonde one, and it's sort of like it sounds as silly as like. It reminds me of the baby character from South Park where he says donkey raping shit either. And it reminds me of that, where it's like it sounds so unnatural and so ridiculous. Like every single time, fucking this, it's like, oh my god, sweetheart, you sound so dumb. You sound so dumb. And it was just sort of was like, here's the other question I thought about this when this was over with, was who was this made for? Because there isn't the kind of the TNA thing of like the softcore, you know, VHS Playboy tapes or whatever else. So there's not that. And there's not that kind of humanoids from the deep sort of piranha sort of TNA crazy bloody B movie thing. So it's not that. And so it's like, I don't know who this is for. Like, I don't know.
And I think just for the people who are in it.
I really do. Guess. I think it was just like.
And they're like, well, we could probably trick some like fans of the show or horn dogs into watching this.
Yeah, I think this was just a vanity project.
And when it's done, like, oh shit, this is what it turned out as? Well, okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I would have maybe given this a 3 out of 10 except for the soundtrack, which just got worse
God,
and worse.
Yes. Oh.
I cringed for you in the Bridget one when they started with the alt like emo whiny shit.
Oh.
Like, oh, this hurts me, and I know that it hurts Matt even more deeply.
It's so bad.
So I got like a 2.5 out of 10 Bridget Marquardt's.
Yeah, I'm 2 out of 10 poison cookies I wanted to eat instead of watching this.
I mean, I'm in that same boat. I mean, I was thinking about in terms of bad movies, and one of the movies that I saw not too long ago was a movie called Ghost Team 1, and it made me angry.
I've heard of that
one. Yeah. It made me angry for a week. These motherfuckers, if I ever run into these bastards, we're going to have a conversation, because they're aggressive and racist and ridiculous, and just a pit of swill that never should have gotten made. There are more talented people in the world that have projects that aren't getting made, but these guys made this thing. And yet, I would watch that movie again over this goddamn thing. I didn't think that was possible. I did not think in my lifetime that would be possible. I would rather watch fucking Ghost Team 1 again.
Discovering New Lows is a horror show hot dog theme.
That
is something
thing.
We do. Our mission statement is going to make that happen. Yeah.
Wait. All right. We're going to take a...
Yeah, no, I just... Oh, goodness.
We're going to take a... We're going to... Wait. I feel like... But if you could, I better go. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Big Bad Wolves. And we're back with Big Bad Wolves, or Lobos Grandes y Malas.
I like that one. Lobos always makes me happy.
Yeah, Los Lobos. Para bailar la bamba se necesita una poca de gracia.
Okay.
So this is Charlie hitting one out of the park with a recommendation, because I've been thinking about this film for 2 days.
Yep.
Since I saw it. It continuously confounds your expectations while making you wonder who you should root for and who you should feel sorry for.
Yeah.
And it features a guy who looks like Steve Carell on steroids.
Yeah.
Do you notice our hero just kind of looks like maybe like if Fonzie and Steve Carell got into the like transporters and got melded together?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
See, I always think of him, the actor, I always think of him as looking like the real-life personification of a Bill Plimpton drawing. Of like what a person looks like, but like a real human being version of a Bill Plimpton drawing. Because that his forehead and his brow and jaw is like, that's not the way a human being is actually put together. It's like, oh my gosh. He's a hell of an actor, though, that guy. God almighty.
Yeah, no, this movie was start to finish, like I think it was almost like 2 hours long, and yeah. I had no idea till it was over because it just flew by.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the basic premise: kids are being kidnapped and horribly abused and decapitated. Bodies are found, but not the heads.
Mm-hmm.
Israeli police looking for the people. Dad of one of the victims captures the potential guilty party, tortures him. So that is like the plot of a Hostel or Saw movie.
Yeah.
And this is a torture porn movie without the torture porn. It is just a movie that happens to have torture in it that is never played graphically or for to squick you out, but is every bit as weighty because it's played for the reality and like is so well smartly said. Done. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like it's the camera never leers at the torture in this movie.
Well,
it doesn't even give you much of a close-up. Yeah. Like, you
don't do those things where you go, bah, bah.
Yeah, you get, like, a finger... The finger break that is perfectly bloodless takes forever to get to. And what makes it so hard to watch is how uncomfortable the person doing it is.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, that is way smarter than what the average movie does, like Teresa's or Hostel or whatever, where they focus on the discomfort of the person having the finger broken. And you don't even see the toenail come off.
Yeah.
You don't really get much of a view of the hammer hitting the hand. Like, the blowtorch bit is astounding. But
yeah, that is some amazing effect.
That is really good. But overall, it's played very subtly.
Yeah.
And it's clearly there, and it's intense, but it's never... It's not torture porn. It's not leering. It's just a movie that has that as a mechanism.
Well, this is... Like, this is one of those movies where I'm watching it getting more and more kind of into, like, the getting more and more uncomfortable about what's going on and the tension that keeps building and building and building. Suddenly realizing that, like, my tongue has filled my entire mouth because I've had my mouth open panting.
Yeah.
Just waiting to figure out, oh, shit, what the fuck?
Yep.
Because for most of it, you're not told how to feel about these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it really seems like you have this, like, nebbishy guy who somebody saw his bike at the scene of the crime or whatever.
I forget what there's a tangential...
Yeah. So he gets picked up and beaten up at the beginning to get a confession. And the whole time he's just proclaiming his innocence. And you wonder if the, you know, like, the cop and the victim's dad, like, why don't they understand that...
That they could
they
be
could
wrong.
Be wrong.
Yeah.
And the cop gets a little bit of that, but the dad is never wavering in that.
No, he is.
And it's so uncomfortable because he's clearly, like you said, it takes a maniac to take out a maniac.
Yep.
Oh, I love that line. He's clearly insane.
Yep. Which, by the way, now that we've just talked about how horrible and torturous and psychotic people are, this movie's fucking funny.
It is really blackly comedic.
Like, crazy funny. I spent, probably the first half of the movie before it finally gets dark to the point where you're uncomfortable, I spent far more time laughing than I did being, you know, nervous or agitated or anxious, but not in a Tucker and Dale versus Evil, not in a Shaun of the Dead. You know, this is just a movie that is just, it happens to be funny, but it is not horror played for laughs. It's a horror movie, but the people do things that are funny, because in the scenes where they're being funny, for the most part, it's because the real world is happening in such a way that
you laugh. You know, it's not, isn't it funny that he slipped and fell on a pile of guts from a zombie? It's not that splatstick stuff. It's, you know, the guy's mom calling just as he's about to do something horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I gotta take this or she worries. Shit like that. Like, it's...
And him trying to take it as he's holding the pliers on the toenail, and then, oh, shit, I got shitty reception. Hold on, dude, I'll be right back.
I gotta go upstairs, yeah. And, like, oh, God, but there's a million little... Or the guy had to take your kid to work day.
Mm.
While the fucking chief of police is just reaming the dude a new one.
Like, yeah, to the traffic department.
And, like, all that shit is just... None of it is dependent on that.
The casting of that police captain guy, that the mountain of a man... Yeah. He never does anything physical.
Yeah, like modern-day Tor Johnson, but he's just a bureaucrat through and through.
Yeah, he's like old-school Stacy Keach.
Yeah, it's just like, it's incredible. You're like, oh, man, this guy's going to put his fist through a wall. And he never even, besides just sitting near the chair of Mickey's chair, it's like beyond that, he doesn't do anything physical. And the whole thing, which is amazing.
He has this expression on his face, too, though, that he knows... He is a giant man made for a gladiator arena. But, like, you can practically hear his thoughts of how he needs to pick up some Preparation H.
Yep.
Because he always gets constipated when he's tense, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's just like, this guy's, like, my ulcer is going to be a bitch tonight. Because my acid reflux is coming back because of this asshole fucking up, and it's on YouTube. This is weird. This is the first time in a long time I've been hesitant to talk too much about a movie.
Yeah, I was
because
just
I enjoyed the experience so much.
God, I don't want to spoil the plot twist.
And we normally are all about just going, like, talk, our show is a spoiler, but this one I really feel is best experienced. And it's, since it is so new, I'm hesitant to really get into the details.
Well, you know, the one thing that one of the guys that I remember seeing it with, and we kind of shot the breeze about it, and then seeing it again recently kind of reminded me, one of the things that's really neat about this movie is that if this was, and I'm not down on American thriller movies by any stretch, but if this was an American thriller, what would have happened is at the very beginning of the movie, when they've got the schoolteacher guy that they're trying to beat a confession out of, which, by the way, the use of the phone book was just goddamn brilliant. I love that.
Yeah, I love that bitch.
Just being hauls off just this full-on, you know, Happy Gilmore run-up thing where he's just, like, just nails him with the phone book. But anyway, like, if this was an American thriller movie, like a police kind of procedural serial killer kind of movie, what would have happened was... The red herrings would have been flying 10 ways till Tuesday, right from the opening sequence, and then they'll sprinkle them in every once in a while. Versus here, we have a very small group of people that we're dealing with, and a very small bit of information. That's another thing, is they don't go matty cookie bananas with a lot of data, and so mm-hmm. like you don't feel as though you're going to get a lecture halfway through the thing that's going to take 10 minutes long with a bunch of information or whatever else.
Yeah, you're never waiting for Basil Exposition to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
It's small enough to wrap your brain around the whole time.
Well, at different points in this thing, I mean, I would say definitely after watching this now for the third time, that like at different points you feel as though any of the main players, if not one or two other unseen people, could be the potential perpetrator. Like at one point you think Mickey is, and then you get Giddy, and you've got the dad, and you've got the other guy, and it's just like you just go down the list, and at one point or other everybody kind of seems like something's funny going on with this character. And it's not played, because it's not played for cute either, you know. They don't play it like, oh well, we might think he's the bad guy for a minute. It's not played that way. It's just sort of played like this is an ugly, greedy situation that gets uglier and grittier as it goes along. While at the same time you're laughing and you're feeling really weird about laughing.
I think there are
scenes where you're like, oh my god, I just laughed at that.
Yeah, I think the amount of humor that this movie has, especially front-loaded in the first third and then sprinkled throughout the second third, really makes you feel bad in the latter part of the movie, I think. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucker punches you and pulls the rug out from under you because you were having so much fun with all these same characters, mm-hmm. and now you're left wondering, I was getting along with this guy, you know what I mean? Like, I was on this guy's side, I was rooting for this guy, I was laughing at or with this guy. Oh, shit, this isn't necessarily the person I thought this was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching them be capable of something, or it's like, oh, dude, like, you know, you'd watch, you know, someone kind of abandon their moral compass for a minute and be like, oh shit, I thought you were better than that. Like, and you cared enough to have that thought.
Right.
Which is a sign of really great character work, because it's, you know, when we have a moment or two where our good cop, I guess kind of our main I guess he's the protagonist of this. Our cop is kind of the through line. And there's a couple moments where I go, oh, fuck, dude, what are you doing? You're better than that. And he didn't have a lot of time. And the thing is, this is the guy that you see beating a handcuffed suspect in the first scene. And I'm going, you're better than this. And it's like, well, no, you've really never given me reason to think that. You know, you beat a dude with a phone book, and my read on that was because you do this so often, you learned if you do it with a phone book, you don't have bloody scraped up knuckles later. Yeah. Like, I look at that as like a thing that you learn from past experience of like, well, then I can deny having beaten the guy because he can look at my fist and see I haven't been punching anyone. And it's like, that's a horrible person. But at the same time, like, we're given, you know, the tallest jockey. You know, he's the least of many evils. But it's, oh, God, yeah. You know, I said the line on the poster is, some men are created evil, and I kept glancing at that on, like, the Wikipedia page while I was watching it, and going, is that referring to everyone in this movie? Mm. Is that referring to the dad? Is that referring to the killer? And applying it differently throughout viewing the movie.
Yeah.
I kept coming back to that tagline and trying to decide exactly what they were trying to say with that. And I felt like the interpretation of that made sense in total different ways throughout watching the movie. And like you said, I've been chewing it over for a couple days now.
Well, you know, the other thing too with that line, if you think about the way that it builds, and Josh, you touched on this about the building of the tension. One of the things about this movie that I really love is that, like, at no point is the viewer ever let off the hook. Where,
yeah.
You know, the viewer is never, in a lot of thriller movies, you know, and again, big on American ones, but like, a lot of times where you get that thing where, like, two-thirds of the way through the movie, you're like, you're given the cookie. Like,
yeah.
here's your data, here's your information, all right, you're good now, we're set with you, we're going to do some needlessly silly action sequences for a while, but you're given this information, and you're good with that for a bit. Whereas with this one, like, they don't ever do that, and they don't ever give you that release valve, or they don't ever give you that little bit of information where you just sit with that for a while. But what's amazing is, once you get to the end of the movie, you realize they fucking did. They did at like three different points in the movie. You just didn't realize it at the time.
Well, and that's just...
Like, these beautifully ambiguous scenes where you think you saw something and then later...
And it wasn't. Yeah, and that was what I was going to say, is did either of you guys upon... Well, for you, Charlie, on first viewing, I did not know for sure what exactly was the truth until that last scene.
Meaning?
Yeah, I did not.
Because I didn't know. I was like, they might just end this without the denouement that this needs.
Right.
And I was like, wow, if this movie leaves us blue-balled on is it or isn't it, and who did what, that's pretty bold, and I don't know if that would piss me off or not.
Right.
And then I had just enough time to have that thought before they laid it out for me, which I was okay
with. Once the camera moves to the left.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, all right. Now they've explained it, and I was glad they did, I think. I think that was satisfying, but I really did not know until then. Because even the lines being delivered until that camera pan had me going, I still don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the thing. I mean,
this is genius.
One of the things about this movie that I really loved, and I got to pay attention to a little more this time around, was the score. And part of the thing, a lot of times the score will give you a clue.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, oh, somebody's going to die accidentally. Somebody's going to die on purpose. Somebody's going to get away. And we kind of know these building things and the way the strings work. With this one, with this film, the score by Frank Elfman is like, it's just like this pulsing, like, tense, you know, tangle up in itself, this thing that just bah, 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 and just goes and goes and goes and goes, and then it gets a little twinkle in the foot, and then just goes and goes and goes. And it's like, it never gives you any goddamn clues. Ever. You know, like, it doesn't tell you any data. And I noticed that more so this time around, as, like, you're waiting for it to kind of give you a clue as to, oh, this person's clearly going to be okay, or this person's clearly not going to be okay, or this is whatever, and nothing. Nothing.
I think, no, yeah, I think...
this big textural thing throughout the entire movie where it's just, like, it drives that tension a little bit more so than maybe it would if they kind of keyed off of certain plot points with the music, you know?
No, I would agree completely. I think that your idea about the score there underlies like the broader point that never once does this movie hold your hand.
Yeah.
It trusts you to just go with it, and it's like, you'll get this or you won't, and maybe you don't understand it now, but you'll understand it later. We're giving you all you need, but we're going to make you work for it. And I feel like that's great.
You know, another thing I wanted to ask you guys about, I really wanted to get your ideas on this, because I've been thinking about this question, is that, you know, in this movie, you're dealing with this god-awful crime, this really disgusting, very evil kind of crime. And you're dealing with these guys that the dad the grandfather, the teacher, the police detective, all these guys that are all these people that we're dealing with in this movie, they all have the specter of this really god awful evil thing that's going on. But like one thing I was kind of wondering was that, like, you know, do you kind of feel as though when you watch this through, it doesn't really spend a lot of time with the dead girls, you know, like it doesn't
almost none.
It doesn't almost nothing. But it's this really god awful, really disgusting crime. But like it doesn't deal with that, and so like it's one of the things where almost like with the father character, this vengeful, mean sort of guy who's not leaving it to the police, you kind of feel for him a little bit at the very beginning when you see him at the very beginning when the daughter's body is found. You feel for him, but then
they use a ton of restraint on the body.
But that shot is exactly enough to be devastating.
Yep. Yeah, there's nothing
implied. What's
revealed there. Yeah, and you're like, God damn, man, it really hits you in the heart, and then
which you don't. Yeah, you don't even know that you don't know the decapitation bit until they say it later. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I think in that initial scene that tells you. Oh, by the way, speaking of the decapitation, the Wikipedia summary of the movie has this amazing line where an unnamed caller led the police, capital P, to the location of the girl's body in a field. She had been sexually assaulted, and her missing head has been decapitated. Thank you, Wikipedia.
It's the worst when they decapitate your missing head, too.
I read that line and was like, yes.
Decapitation to the extreme.
Double capitated.
You know this?
The reason I was asking this is that, like, in this type of a movie, when you're dealing with this kind of really ugly kind of crime, usually a crime suspense kind of movie spends a lot of time with, like, the family breakdown. Or like you get the crying family member at the table scene, or you get the, you know, you get all these kind of moments of this kind of family tragedy, and outside of that very early spot with the dad character,
when he shows up at the actual scene.
Yeah, he shows up at the scene at the very beginning. You really get hit in the heart, but from that point forward, like it's not as though the movie abandons the fact that this god awful ugly crime is going on. But, like, it doesn't... It's like the specter that they don't believe in. It's the most weird thing. And then when the dad is bringing up these things in terms of how the girl was assaulted and all this kind of stuff, it is so disconnected from the way you expect the emotional behavior to be. And it's like... You know, I don't know about you guys, but, like, it was one of those things that really struck me as kind of unique. Like, you don't see this very often in the way that this type of story is handled.
And this thing... This is the type of story that I'm normally not that into.
True crime kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I've said many times that I prefer a monster, you know, or a supernatural thing in my horror. I don't generally like, you know, I don't want to watch Last House on the Left or I Spit on Your Grave or, you know, that whole kind of like, let's just do something horrible to another human being that actually does happen in the world.
That
generally is not terribly compelling to me just because that is kind of a thing. And so, meh. I prefer a little more fantasy in my horror, but this one, I think they have such a light and deft touch with the real world horror of it, and then it's kind of only obliquely discussed here and there. You know, I'm sure they have to be like, "Where's the head?" You know, but I mean, they hit you with it and then it's gone. And it is, I think, like you said, Charlie, it's kind of a gut punch. And the rest of the movie is you trying to get your wind back from that, but you don't get repeatedly beaten with it.
Yeah.
And so then it was just compelling watching people talk to each other. This is basically a courtroom drama. You know,
it is
really just you have prosecution and defense with screwdrivers. it is really just he said, she said, you know, evidence and denial, and you know, it is much more of that than it is anything. I mean, most of the movie is static in one room, and that's bizarre and weird that should work, but I think it, for me at least, that's a testament to how good I think this movie is, because this should not work for the kind of movie I like. But I think it kind of is just that good. It's like, I don't generally like country music, but I like Johnny Cash. I don't generally like true crime-ish horror, but this is fucking great.
Well, the plot in this is so beautifully tracked out that, like, you know, you may not know this about me, but I'm the kind of person that a really bad plot twist or a really cliche twist can wreck a movie for me. You may not know that.
So, like, if you had to give me, like, a for instance.
Well, like, if, say...
Let's say you're French. What would be the movie that would most likely upset
say there's
you in that
a,
style?
Like a giant serial killer who's chasing around the heroine the whole movie, and at the end you find out they're the same person.
Is it a tense movie?
Because that would be super dumb. The tension level throughout I would characterize as high.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
But, so I'm sitting here in this movie going, oh man, please don't tell me that he's the guilty one. Huh. No, he's totally not. Man, it's going to be lame if he is. It's going to be kind of lame if he isn't. Huh. And in the middle of thinking there's no way that they can land this plane and satisfy what I want out of this movie, they absolutely did.
Yep.
And left me going, you kept me guessing so and reversed on me so many times that I'm still surprised by this, even though I was trying to think two steps ahead of you the whole time. Because I didn't want you to outsmart me.
This is the type of movie that
brilliant for that.
From jump, you start trying to outwit this movie, and the strength of this movie is that they knew that and were confident in their ability to outwit us.
I would like to see it again.
For me,
though,
at least
Charles,
succeeded.
Having seen it a couple of times, are those clues there?
Well, they absolutely are. And the thing about it is that they're not done in cutesy ways, which is one thing I love about this movie, is that like it's not cute. It's not funny, yeah. It's not winky, you know, like a lot of times, and even the movies that I like, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of times those kind of crime caper movies where a lot of stuff is done with just something nodding to the point where you think they're having a stroke, the level of nodding to the camera that's going on, you know what I mean?
They're head burning it.
It gets real silly, and sometimes I enjoy those movies. I mean, like Ocean's 11 is one big goddamn nod, the whole thing, but I still enjoy
it. Yeah, but it's a joy to watch,
It's so much fun, but it's still a lot of like winky, winky, you know, whatever. And so, but this one, like, I knew what was gonna happen. And so, you get to kind of pay attention to some of the details and stuff. And no, it never gets cutesy. When you're actually kind of satisfied, because even somebody who's smart watching it, you know, I mean, you know, you guys have seen 10,000 of these things. So I mean, it's sort of like you're watching this, your eyes kind of train a little bit. And so they're not playing games. They're not playing a bait and switch bullshit game. But they, you know, it is kind of all there. Another thing I will say too that I noticed this time around. On top of how beautiful the score is done within some of the humor, is the way this film is shot. The sequence with the dad going down the stone hallway down to the basement and that whole bit, the way that is shot, I was just like, oh my god. Like, I'm expecting something to jump out from behind the wall. What is going to jump out from behind the wall? There's nothing that's going to be there. What could possibly jump out of it? But I'm feeling like, oh, there's going to be something right there. He's going to turn around. There's going to be something else. There'll be a guy with an axe. There'll be a dude with a hood. Something. And it's like, and it's not because you feel like it's going to happen because they're doing a bunch of red herring baloney. It's because the way that it looks and the way that the cinematography and the colors and the color palette works with the score and these excellent actors, you kind of get this thing where you're like, okay, you're coming at me with all guns here, and so I just have to sit back because
there's this atmosphere of dread, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all kind of jives together, you know. Like, I think if this film was done and shot in a way, like, and Matt, you pointed out that it is kind of dialogue and talky heavy at points, and sometimes very silly. So, like, with the dad and the son having the soup, like, that scene is just goofy as hell. But, like, it is a lot of talky heavy kind of stuff. But had it not been shot in a way that it maintains its shooting style, I think the release valve would have actually kind of been let loose, and you've been like, take a breath, you know, that kind of stuff. And it never happens, you know, you don't ever get that sort of luxury.
Yeah.
You know, you can get those scenes later in the film that are almost silly, and like, for one, you kind of need it, but on the other hand, it's just ratcheting up the tension even farther because you know the guy's downstairs tied up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the beginning of Inglourious Basterds when there's that gigantic monologue, which is actually a little bit could be dull, but then there's the people right underneath his feet.
Yep.
And so the tension just keeps building and building. And the scene at the beginning where he goes with the realtor and buys the house.
Oh, yes.
She's in the basement and screaming.
Yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
is, oh, God, you expect something shitty to happen
to
her.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's one of the rare occasions where a boo scare was actually good.
Yeah.
When she's, like, screaming and she's, my entire body is clenched tight as a puckered asshole.
Yep.
And then when he puts his hand on her shoulder, everything releases.
Yeah.
well, now I need to get him up, but yeah. That was a really great scene.
Yeah.
No, I this movie also gets mad credit just for being maybe the first or one of the only movies we've just decided to not entirely spoil.
Yeah. I don't. I really don't want to rob anyone of discovering it.
Because even when we did Cabin in the Woods, which I think is the more blind you go into that, the better. It had been out, and you know, people had had the time to see it before we did it, whereas I feel like with this one, it's a little too fresh where I don't want to go super crazy spoiler-heavy on it.
Well, these guys, too, fresh.
You know,
Sorry.
Also, you know, the other thing, too, I want to definitely throw in there is that Aaron and Navat did one previous to this in 2010 called Rabies, and that is definitely worth tracking down.
That was one of my next questions, is what else have these guys done, because I want to see more.
Yeah, their only other feature is Rabies, and it's excellent. It's a total Raiden switcheroo for the kind of breakdown in the woods kind of setup, mm-hmm. and it's got these multiple factions. You've got people that are in the woods that seem like they're in a bad situation. You got people that are going to get stuck in the woods. You got this other guy going on. You've got a hunter sort of character that seems disconnected, and you got all this shit going on, and that is a lovely, dark, fun little thing. That is great. And that's what really got me on these guys, was that movie back from a few years ago.
Cool.
And so this is only their second feature. And then they're lined up. They're going to have a segment in the ABCs of Death, the new ABCs of Death one. They're going to be in there.
Which we will gladly watch.
We will watch.
And then they've got one other project going. But the thing with these two boys is that they're, you know, as you know from the language of the movie and the way it was shot and everything else, is that this is only the... They wouldn't even call this... I don't think they even refer to this as horror in Israel. Rabies was the first horror movie ever to come out of Israel.
Huh.
And then this one is more, you know, more noir, but I think it still definitely has horror elements to it. But this is not a big thing that comes out of their country.
They don't need it.
No, and they're just... It's not their thing, you know? It's not their... They don't... You know, it's like... Like in Germany in the 80s, you had to go to the film council, which is just, you know, kind of a panel of gods. You know, so it's like when you're trying to get, you know, permits and other things, it's not like the United States. You just pay and you get it. It's a different kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And they're, Aaron and Navat, they're real good guys, real down to earth. But man, they got a vicious sense of humor. I mean, these movies, this one and Rabies both, are just that jet black heart of humor, you know, and it's just, I'm very glad. I didn't want to push the issue one way or the other, but I'm very glad that you guys have thought about it in terms of like not talking about the kind of the last parts of this film, because it's just one of those things where it's like I can see it argued either way, you know, because the ending is the last 15 minutes of this movie are just like bam, 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 and it's just this roller coaster kind of situation. But at the same time, like I can also see that like understanding why it's good. It requires talking about that too.
You know?
It's weird, you know. It's like it's kind of this weird sort of yin yang kind of thing.
You just have to imagine, like, if M. Night Shyamalan had kept getting better after like Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, if he had just continued to improve all the way up until now, this is a movie that he would have made.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
And it's just remarkably sure footed for these guys,
especially for being that young.
There is a heart to this too, though. Like,
yes,
I really love the scene with the cop and the guy on horseback.
Oh yeah,
because you have
that's so interesting.
Talk about taking your 2,000 years of these people hating each other, and just having this really natural, really real conversation between the two of them.
Yeah,
and I absolutely love the way that plays out.
Yeah, that I forgot that. That,
well, that comes
very
up a few
smart.
Times thematically too.
They were like, it's surrounded by Arab villages, so, you know, it's cheap.
But, I mean, it's the kind of thing that you can, in a lesser movie, a major thing, especially if we're coming from that actual region, being dealt a glancing blow would be the worst thing ever. But I feel like this isn't just that they kind of, you know, skipped a rock off that pond. They made their mark, but they did it, again, with a light, deft touch, and that was enough to... say a little bit of something, but it doesn't have that, like, what was it, Don't Be a Menace, where the guy just literally jumps and goes message whenever they're trying to insert a message in the movie. It doesn't have that, you know, abrupt obviousness.
Yeah, it's
to
just
it.
A really down to earth, like, the thing is, all of the people in this movie are believable people,
mm-hmm.
and everything, they keep it nicely grounded. So, huh, do you want to
wrap,
wrap
on this one? Yeah. Yeah. I just, thanks for suggesting this, Charlie. This is fucking great.
I'm glad you guys liked it.
This is definitely one that I'll be pimping to a lot of other people. This one is, yeah, definitely, I'd say like a 9 out of 10 hastily baked cakes.
Yeah. it's kind of sickening how good this is.
I don't want to interrupt. I'm sorry, Josh, I don't want to interrupt you, but you mentioned something about the cakes. That sequence with the Buddy Holly playing in the background.
So good.
Oh, my God.
So good.
Oh, so great. So dementedly dark and funny at the same time. Every day. It's like, oh.
I love that song.
I'm sorry, Josh. Just,
it is kind of sick how good this is, considering how young these guys are. It's like when you meet somebody who is amazingly talented and smart and good-looking. You're like, at least tell me you're an asshole. He's like, no, I work with orphans.
I know, and then you ask me to do your horror movie podcast with you, and here I am.
Oh, tale's old as time. Chico and the Man. Certain as the sun giving you a tan. But, yeah, the cinematography is amazing. The pacing's amazing. The score's amazing. The acting's amazing. The plot manages to satisfy in a way that it does not seem this plot would
the
be
rich
able
man's
to satisfy.
Steve Carell.
Right, rich man. Steve Carell on steroids is amazing as well. The Steve Hulk Hogan hybrid. So, yeah, it's definitely like a 9, almost a 9.5 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say 9.5 because I'm probably still just riding the endorphins of it.
Right.
But it's really fucking good golf. Out of 10.
Yeah, no, this is one of those ones that, you know, I like, one of my big things outside of just straight up horror movies is I love revenge stories that are not dumb. I like ones that are just real simple, that are just...
You must
like,
be an unhappy man a lot
I was
going
to say, that went from a really broad genre to a very narrow genre.
That's what I'm saying, like, there are not a lot of good ones. There's some gonzo batshitty ones, like a Miss 45 or one of these ones where it's just, there are some whack-a-noodles kind of stuff where it's, but I mean, it's one of those things where I just love really good kind of a really smart revenge stuff that isn't overthought, that isn't overcomplicated, that isn't over showy. And that's one of the things I love about this movie, is that it's just real simple and real straightforward.
We should maybe do a week sometime with just a revenge theme.
Actually, I'll tell you, if you want to hold that for a bit, in April 7th, somewhere in the beginning part of April, another movie from Fantastic Fest is going to come out finally. I think on VOD and some theaters. It's Jeremy Sautier. It's called Blue Ruin. It was my favorite film of last year, period. And it is a no fucking around kind of a revenge sort of movie. That one and Rolling Thunder are two ones that I just, in terms of revenge movies, just love.
I'd probably go old school and go like Straw Dogs. But
the original.
But yeah, like I think that there'd be some fun stuff to do there. But yeah, we can wait. Like let's keep them in the back burner. I think that'd be a fun one to do.
But so I love that kind of. I like things that don't treat like an idiot and aren't overthought and are just real, real straight up. And these two guys, Aaron and Devot, they're like, the way they construct films is like they're actually aware of how films ought to look, and they're aware about the way they ought to sound. And, you know, the way that the dialogue just clicks and the way that everything kind of works that way. Yeah, I really admire the craft of it. It's not just a cool movie, like the craft of it, the way it's shot and the lighting and the effects, the way some of that stuff is done. I just, you know, I love all that stuff. And so it's, I really admire it, you know, and I like people that are real craftspeople. And that's one reason why I love this movie. And so I'm really glad that we had a chance to do it. Yeah, I would probably stick in that 9 out of 10. I mean, I think when I did it, when I wrote it, I think I did like 4.5 out of 5 or something like that. So, yeah, I'd say 9 out of 10 makes sense. 9 out of 10 rusty saw blades? Maybe?
There you go. Mm. All right, let's take a break and come back with next week's assignments.
Cool.
So if we were smart, we would already have pulled up the name of the person who suggested these, but we have some listener suggestions for next week. This listener who shall remain nameless
for a split second.
For like 2 seconds as I vamp.
Vamp.
Suggested
ire.
That,
I think I've made that exact joke.
You did, and we talked about how it was raising my ire.
Andrew Sparks.
Andrew Sparks. Of the Southampton Sparks. Spark Notes fame.
What
did I say? Maybe.
What?
Andrew Sparks from the British band The Sparks from the 80s suggested a body horror week, which we're going to hit up. He gave us a bunch of titles and some second-tier titles and some suggestions, so we're going to hit Videodrome, Street Trash, and the we're adding The Fly, the Cronenberg
Jeff Goldblum.
1980s Goldblum Fly.
If we're going to watch a movie with Jeff Goldblum, at some point we can go...
Oh, hey, and then also want to throw in there, too, that I'm going to send you guys that I'll send you guys the link for the Vimeo thing for Torturous.
Oh, yeah, so we totally.
Get a real quick mention, and it'll, you know, maybe we can talk about it for a couple of minutes, and, but I'll send that to you to make sure you have it.
Yeah, awesome. we've set a precedent for shorts with Treevenge.
Treevenge.
The best precedent ever.
So fucking good.
So give us the Fly, Street Trash, Videodrome for next week. Join us in the conversation at horrorshowhotdog.com, facebook.com/horrordog. reddit.com/r/hshd and at HSHD Podcast on Twitter. One of these days we'll actually start using that.
Allegedly.
I'm going to be doing a polar plunge this weekend.
Yep.
And you can find information on that at plungemn.org/team/fearless. And that's us, and we'll be jumping into ice cold water against our better judgment. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks for sitting in, dudes. I'm just going to say bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ata. Hello. Anybody there? Anybody there? Hello?